From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. If someone asked you what's your top priority when it comes to health care, what would you say? Well, that's the question. A group of 23 different hospitals, health districts, and other agencies asked the people who live in 10 counties in Western Idaho. Now, the answers are in, and now that that group, known as the Western Idaho Community Health Collaborative, or WICHC for short, has an action plan to try to address the top three concerns of community members. So here to talk about the survey and that action plan are Alexis Pickering, the Western Idaho Community Health Collaborative Program Manager, Angie Gribble with St. Luke's Health System, and Megan Remmel-Alley with United Way of Treasure Valley. I want to welcome all of you to the program.
Thanks, Joa.
Thank you.
So we've talked a little bit in the past about community health needs assessments, but Alexis, for folks who might not be familiar, can you just give us an overview of what exactly this is?
Yeah, thanks, Gemma. So the Western Idaho Community Health Collaborative, otherwise known as WICHC, as you put it, was established in 2019 thanks to four private funders and the legislature, because we have such, you know, high complex needs in the 10 county swath of Idaho that we're working in. But the population, generally speaking, and the partners that work in that realm are largely very collaborative. And they wanted to put their heads together to see what we could do to make a really big impact in addressing these complex health issues. So we were established in 2019. We've been around for 4.5 years. And basically those 10 counties that we serve are urban, they're rural, they're frontier. It's, like I said, half the state's population. And we really needed to have this group of leaders that could, again, test various potential solutions, talk about those shared challenges. And this is the first of its kind in Idaho history and largely national history to see this type of model come to be. And then having an action plan like this that's going to guide the work of those 23 members for the next 3 years.
Okay, so if my understanding is right, you do these every 3 years. And why is this year's assessment different? Is it because so many different groups actually came together to do this? So Alexis, let's start with that part of the question.
Yeah, so basically there's, generally speaking, you know, there, and I know Angie and Megan can speak to these particulars a little bit more in depth, but there's lots of different partners that have to do community health needs assessments for either legal reasons or their best practice, right? To understand what the community's needs actually are. And as like as someone that works in local public health, it is essential for us to know what those priorities are so that we can match those priorities and serve our populations better. So generally there's been a lot of those types of assessments going on over the course of our, you know, existence as agencies, but there never was a coordinated, collaborative CHNA that has served this many people and this many partners. And so, I mean, I could speak to, you know, these were two competing health systems. There also was a private health system, two health districts, which have never collaborated in this way as well as United Way and a rural independent hospital. So those partners have never worked together, and we've never served, even though our geographies and our reach overlap tremendously in this 10 county region, we've never actually collected data together. And so that CHNA that was published in 2023, June of 2023 last year, we worked to identify and prioritize, okay, based off of these needs, what should we be doing about it? And that question about how do we actually solve for these things together rather than going to our own agencies and saying, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. We're like, well, actually, we all need to work together on this because these issues are so much bigger than just one agency or one sector. And so that type of collaboration on this action plan has never happened in Idaho history. So this action plan that we'll talk about here shortly, that as an action plan has never existed. And these types of strategies that we're all working on are things that some of our partners have some experience in and some that don't. So the fact that these agencies from all different, you know, sectors or parts of serving a person's health and well-being are coming together to learn and leverage their strengths while also stepping into realms that maybe they're not as comfortable or used to being in is a really big step for our region and for Idaho.
So, Angie, let me bring you into the conversation. How has St. Luke's been involved in the past, and how were you involved in this latest survey?
Yeah, thank you, Gemma. St. Luke's has done, as Alexis mentioned, community health needs assessments for quite some time as a not-for-profit hospital system in Idaho. And it started out where we did this assessment very independently and within our own organization. So we had our own timelines, our own methodology, our own outreach for these assessments. And our plans were inclusive of only those programs and services that St. Luke's owned and delivered ourselves. Starting in 2016, we started to mature that a little bit differently, where we still did the assessment just ourselves and independently, but we started to incorporate partnerships into our plans and a little bit of collaboration into our plans. Because the assessment timelines, though, were still our own, our methodology was still our own, there was still some limitations, and then our partners needed to be aligned with the priorities that we set. They needed to be aligned with the timelines that we set, et cetera. So the next iteration, which in 2023, we were so excited to have, is actually to do that data collection together collaboratively with our partners. So now we are all of these organizations on the same timelines, aligned with the same health priorities, and pooling our resources together for the assessment and the implementation. So I'm really excited to be a part of this. And it's just kind of the next iteration of St. Luke's participation in this work in our communities.
And same question for you, Megan. What is the involvement with United Way?
Thanks, Gemma. United Way has been delighted to be a part of community health needs assessments also for quite some time. But the same is true that you heard from our other partners, that we had been doing it in a smaller partnership, namely with St. Alphonsus historically, but we recognized that we were missing an opportunity. You know, Alexis identified that when we come together, we're able to contribute our strengths, stretch in areas of weakness, and really have a more full scope about the way that we approach the work. So when we had the opportunity to come together to do a region-wide collaborative CHNA, we were delighted because it's better for our neighbors. You know, we were asking them to answer a lot of questions to a lot of different people on a lot of different timelines. And so when we were able to pool resources, it was a better use of resources for our organizations, but also for, you know, the really valuable resource of our neighbors being able to contribute, to share their needs and desires. It was also exciting for us as a data-driven organization trying to decide how we can best show up in the communities that we serve, for us to understand what are the shared needs and opportunities across our region and what's unique, because both certainly revealed themselves and we're excited about how together then through the shared implementation plan, we can answer both of those questions.
So let's jump into the top three health priorities that you found in this research. And the number one on the list is safe and affordable housing, as well as homelessness. I don't think anyone should be surprised by that. But Alexis, let's start with just this simple question. How is housing a health concern?
Yeah, thanks, Gemma. Health is a housing concern. Oh, sorry. Housing is a health concern, excuse me, because as you all know, I mean, housing eats first, right? If we can't be safe in where we live, whether that's due to mold or lead poisoning, or we can't drink safe water because we don't have indoor plumbing, you know, that has a massive impact on your health and well-being, just as much as so as, you know, when you can't live close to where you work, right? So then that creates this massive need for transportation costs and commuting from long distances. And we're given the biggest, you know, the snow events that we've been having recently, right? That also has a massive impact on your ability to get to childcare, get to the doctor's office, right? So where not only the state of the home that you live in, as well as proximity and where you live, has a massive impact on your life expectancy and your ability to thrive. And, you know, in the report, we heard a lot from folks about not just the lack of, you know, there's a big thing around unsafe housing, like you mentioned. We talked about mold and lead and, you know, not being able to get up to par living conditions if you're renting. But we also heard from some of our oldest constituents that there isn't enough supportive housing or older adult housing for them that can no longer live by themselves, even though they want to age in place, as well as families that are expanding or wanting to live in places that they work. And so it's kind of this whole spectrum of housing needs. And there wasn't just one particular type of housing that we pinpointed to in the assessment. And then also something that we've talked about a lot is people tend to think that housing and homelessness is just a quote unquote urban issue. And that was clearly not the case in this assessment. So we talked to folks mm-hmm. in Council, we talked to folks in Glens Ferry. You know, these are very rural and frontier communities as well. And homelessness and housing inaffordability is a massive issue for them too. It just happens to look a little bit differently. They might not be, on the corner of a streetlight, like they might be in downtown Boise or somewhere else. They might be couch surfing, or they might be homeless in the woods. It looks a lot different. And we just need to be able to have those nuanced conversations about what housing needs are in an urban versus maybe a rural environment. And we have that data now, thanks to this assessment.
And Angie, I would assume that when we talk about housing issues, right, that when we then look at people's health and how that's impacted, I would think like things like anxiety, mental health issues would come into play when you are having to deal with this big stressor.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when, as Alexis mentioned, housing or rent eats first. And so that then when that becomes your first focus, your only focus, and that stress on your daily life, it's you're having to make compromises with other areas of your life, whether that's food that you're purchasing, whether it's your transportation, certainly it impacts your healthcare. Being able to pay for that certainly impacts that. And just maybe the inconsistency and stress of the instability of where you will be housed, you and your family, your household. Absolutely, it takes a toll mentally and physically on folks' health.
And Megan, from a United Way standpoint, when you saw that this was the number one concern when it came to health is housing or the lack thereof, how does the United Way play into that to try to tackle this issue?
What the collaborative community health needs assessment does, and in turn, this collaborative implementation plan, is it starts to build a blueprint for the types of solutions our community is looking for. We have some ideas about ways we might be able to help. As you mentioned, most folks probably opened our CHNA and weren't surprised to see housing as a top concern. But what the surveys and interviews and focus groups allowed us to do is to understand how that need shows up. What exactly does it look like? Does it feel like on a day-to-day basis so that we're offering the solutions that will actually work for the folks who are closest to the concern? And that's one way that United Way is able to support, is that when we understand the types of solutions that our communities need, that we can advocate, support, and come alongside those programs to do just what our communities are asking that we do.
Number one on the survey was housing. Number two is behavioral health, specifically mental health and substance abuse. So I want to begin with mental health. Was the lack of doctors and counselors a concern here?
It really was. We heard from folks of all different ages. Of course, the CHNA, we only talked to adults in this case, but adults that were parents or grandparents or teachers talked about the lack of providers that serve and work with kiddos. They also talked about the cost of services and how expensive it is and how impossible it is to even get in, even if you could afford care, as well as stigma using those services. But of course, the lack of providers was a huge issue for both mental health and substance misuse.
Okay. And then the third biggest concern from the survey is limited access to care. We know that Idaho has a doctor shortage, but you found that people were really concerned about dental and vision care. So Angie, is this an issue that St. Luke's has had on its radar?
Yeah, St. Luke's has had a strategic priority of access to care for a few years now, just to meet our mission to improve the health of people in the communities that we serve. We recognize this need and are doing our best as a provider of care to be creative in ways that we increase access to community members. But we also recognize some of those other services like vision and dental are part of the holistic health of the patients that we see in our community members. So where we can find partnerships to be able to make referrals to that and help bolster our partners' capacity to be able to serve folks, we want to do the best that we can. And that's why we're excited to be a part of this collaborative, because then we're all bringing our strengths to the table to just assist that whole healthcare environment in our communities.
So how does the coalition of hospitals and other groups that make up WICHC start to actually tackle a problem like limited access to care, Alexis?
So we actually just released we call it the Regional Health Implementation Plan, or Action Plan for short, which I think is a lot easier for especially our listeners to understand what we're talking about. So we just released it. We had a big event on Thursday inviting a lot of other partners that aren't currently at the WICHC table to partner with us on this. And we're going to be standing up work groups on each of those health priority areas. And we have three strategies for each health priority need. And I can go into some of the specifics if you want, Gemma, but we're really going to get started like next week. So that's the exciting part.
Well, I only have literally 2.5 minutes left with you. So very quickly, how would you define success when it comes to tackling these three problems? And if I could have just one of you answer that question, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll do it really quickly. So I think one is we're successful in bringing transformational amounts of dollars either at the federal or state level to go towards housing, for the housing one for sure. Behavioral health, there's a lot of effort going towards improving our workforce. We want to see an actual improvement in that. And I think coordinating and collaborating with these partners and their various plans to address the workforce shortage is going to be key. And we can move the needle in the next 3 years if we are diligent and actually working together and not either duplicating or leaving an important piece out in this conversation. So I think hopefully in the next 3 years, we'll be able to move that needle. And then third, on access to care, there's some really exciting strategies in there, whether it's creating a mobile health strategy for all these partners, as well as increasing connections to our findhelpidaho.org portal, some really big things that we haven't just had the juice to go towards. And now that we've got these amazing partners on deck to work towards this issue, hopefully we can get more care to the populations that need it most, especially in our rural or underserved parts of our community. So I'm pretty optimistic. We've got a long road ahead of us, but we've got some really great, again, community-driven strategies that I know all of our partners are excited to get started on.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for taking time today to come in and break down all of this information for us. We've been speaking with Alexis Pickering, the Western Idaho Community Health Collaborative, better known as WICHE. She is the program manager. Megan Romali, Director of Community Impact with United Way of Treasure Valley, and Angie Gribble, Senior Director of Community Health and Engagement with St. Luke's Health System. We've been discussing Idaho's first regional health implementation plan and how it will tackle the Treasure Valley's top health needs. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed, because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.